Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 217, and we're going to talk about Hip Camp. Have you not heard of Hip Camp? Well, you're about to, and it's basically a service that allows you to do Airbnb for your van. We're also going to talk about some news, as well as the importance of awnings in your build. We'll have a product review from a truck driver who has seen it all, and a tale from the road that involves many a squeal. And no, I'm not talking about pigs. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you very much for joining me once again. I just came back from a trip. Came back from several trips. My June has been crazy. I have been all over the place. And my most recent trip last week was to Vermont, which is a place that I absolutely love. I lived there for 10 years. One of my kids still lives there. And I love getting to Vermont. Vermont's a funny place. It's one of those states that you only go to if you have to. It's your destination. You're never going to drive through Vermont on the way to somewhere else, most likely. And there's a few states like that in the country. West Virginia is another one. There's no east-west or north-south interstate that West Virginia is in the middle of, except for some very specific routes. And I like these states. I think they're states that you should visit, and I can never stop talking about the beauty that is Vermont. No other state I've been in looks like a postcard everywhere you point your camera as much as Vermont does. Sure, there are sections of Colorado that can compete with that, many parts of Alaska and California as well, etc. But so much of Vermont is like that, that I think it's a truly special place. Anyway, this podcast is not just to talk about Vermont and why they have the best maple syrup in the world. It is actually to discuss how I camped in Vermont, because Vermont is sadly not an easy place for van life. Vermont being a vacation destination, and everybody in New England knows this, it's one of the states in New England that people think of, we'll go there for vacation. Not that many people live there, and the largest city is Burlington, and the population there is under 60,000, and that's the largest city in the state. So this is vacation land, and because of that, there's a lot of trouble finding a place to park. There are a couple of Walmarts, and no, you're not going to park there. I don't think there are any Cracker Barrels. It's a place where there just aren't that many chain restaurants or things like that that are going to let you park. And then just parking anywhere is going to be kind of conspicuous, because it's such a small place that you're going to stick out and people are going to recognize you. And because of that, it's a difficult place to find parking. So most people who head up there don't boondock. They will, if you look at iOverlander, you'll see what I mean. There's very little stuff there. Most people will go to a campground. Problem with that is that the campgrounds fill up very quickly, and, well, they're campgrounds. I don't particularly like campgrounds that much. I don't want to be packed in with a whole bunch of other people with their dogs and their lights and their boomboxes and all that. I would rather be by myself somewhere in the woods. So for this trip, rather than do the kind of stealth camping I've done in the past, which was in my NV 200, a vehicle I could do that in, I decided that since I'll be driving the ambulance, which is loud and very obvious no matter what, I would try to stay somewhere legitimate. Now, I have stayed at the big campground that's not too far from Burlington before, and I had that as a backup, and that would have worked. What I actually ended up doing was trying Hip Camp. That's hipcamp.com, not hippocampus. Hip Camp. The idea behind Hip Camp, it's an Airbnb for RVs and van lifers, meaning that if you own a property and you have a space that someone could park an RV or a van, you can put that up on the site and rent it out just like you would if you had an extra room in your house for Airbnb. It's exactly the same concept. And I've heard of it. I've never tried it before, and I thought, well, this might be the time to give it a shot, especially because the area I wanted to be in was near Burlington and Richmond. And if you're familiar with Vermont, this is northwestern Vermont, Chittenden County. It's where the major population center is in the state, and I wanted to be somewhere near there. And they're literally, between Burlington and Richmond, there are no campgrounds. There's no place to stay anywhere near there. The big campground is 45 minutes or so from Richmond, and all the others are really far away. So I was hoping Hip Camp would have something closer, and indeed, they did. I found a site on HipCamp in Essex, Vermont, or Essex Junction. I can never tell the difference between Essex and Essex Junction. No one has been able to explain it to me. They're apparently two different places, but maybe not. Anyway, Essex and Essex Junction are right between Richmond and Burlington. They're easy access to both, and I thought, great. Now, all I really need is a parking space where I'm not going to get bothered. I am completely self-contained. I don't need to plug in anything. I don't need water. I don't need anything like that. And as far as, you know, having a view or anything, I had stuff to do. I wasn't going to be hanging around the van. So this was literally just a parking space. However, the place that I stayed would have been a great place to spend some time. It was in this old 1830s farmhouse. Now, it was kind of in a suburban neighborhood, so don't get the idea that it was on this massive farm. But this farmhouse had a full acre of land that led down to a river in the back, had a fire pit that we were welcome to use anytime we wanted. There was wood. They provided electricity and water and trash. And as a bonus, they had a paddock filled with fainting goats. And if you've not encountered fainting goats, they're a small species of very cute, very friendly goats that when they're surprised, like if you were to go up to them and clap your hands loudly, they all tip over with their legs in the air. Now, I didn't do that to the poor goats, but apparently it doesn't hurt them in the least. It doesn't bother them. It's just a thing they do, like kind of like roller pigeons will roll through the air. These goats like to just kind of stiffen and fall over. At least that's the story I've heard. Again, I wasn't going to torture the poor goats, but I did take a moment to go down and visit with them, and they were super cute and nice. And my thought is that this experience I had there was actually better than I would have had at a campground. I never even met the hosts. We did everything via the app, the HipCamp app, and he told me how to get there and where to park and all that stuff. And they wanted to meet me. It just didn't work out. I was there at times when they weren't going to be there. They wanted to show me around the place. But they were so well set up that it didn't matter. There was a book explaining everything, and that was all I needed. And I had exactly the stay that I needed to have. I had a safe place to park in the place I wanted to park. And it was just exactly what I wanted. Now, I looked up HipCamp for a bunch of different places in the United States, and they've got a lot of places now. I remember when HipCamp first started, I looked and there was like, you know, a site in every state or something, and I may have mentioned it way back in the early days of this podcast, but it wasn't really a thing that I thought would be useful to too many people. That has totally changed. HipCamp has sites all over the country, and what I really like about HipCamp, and I think what its special bonus is that you're going to be able to park in places you normally wouldn't be able to. You're going to get closer to the destinations you want to get to without staying in a massive commercial park or having to stealth it. Now, we, being van life people, are often not familiar with this concept of paying to stay anywhere. And yeah, HipCamp places cost money. That's the downside. You certainly can't blame these people for wanting to make money off of this. And I don't know what the split is between the people offering the site and how much HipCamp gets or whatever. It doesn't matter. I'm doing this review as a consumer, not as somebody who is thinking about renting out land, although I might. It's possible. Anyway, the place I found was called Glamping with Goats, Tent or Park. And these people are pretty clever. What they've done is combined a bunch of different things. They've got a space for an RV with most hookups. They have a glamping tent that they've set up on a platform. And they also have an Airbnb. So you could actually go to this one place with your whole family who have different comforts. And, you know, if somebody has an RV, they can take the RV there. Somebody is fine with a tent, they can sleep in the tent. And then people who are like, oh, no, I'm not sleeping out in the wilderness. Well, they can go through the Airbnb part and you could have like your family reunion or whatever. And then head up to the famous restaurant in Essex, the Essex Culinary Institute, and do your stuff up there if you want. I had a very, very good experience with this. I thought it was fine. But back to the money part. So it's $40 a night. That may seem like a lot. It may not. The campground was similarly. The campground had a very similar price. And I would rather stay here. This was the location I wanted, and it was a whole lot less hassle. And there were some taxes and stuff. The whole thing for me for two nights came to $94. So was it worth doing this for $94? Could I have stealthed it? Maybe for two nights. Could I have gotten away with it? Again, I'm in an ambulance. It's a difficult vehicle to stealth with. But could I have gone to a park and ride and spent the night there, or parked on a different suburban street? Yes, maybe I could have. But I didn't want to. Because I was going to be spending time with my kid who was releasing his new single, I wanted to focus on that and not have to worry about getting the knock in the middle of the night or having to drive around for hours to find just the right space. So for me, in this example, HipCamp worked perfectly. I found an excellent site. And again, I'm recommending, never mind HipCamp. If you were heading to the Burlington area and looking for a place to park, go ahead and look for RV Parking and Fainting Goats, or Glamping with Fainting Goats, or whatever, in Essex, Vermont, on HipCamp. This is a good place, no doubt. In general, add HipCamp to your quiver of options. You know, you've got iOverlander, you've got all the national park websites, whatever. Don't forget about HipCamp. I have looked and I have tried to look in a bunch of different places, and a lot of the stuff on HipCamp now is kind of becoming Etsy-fied, if you know what I mean, where Etsy used to be this website where people could sell their handcrafts, and it's become something a bit more commercial than that. I'm noticing a lot of commercial campgrounds on HipCamp. So, okay, that's fine. They're using HipCamp as a booking engine for their campsites. That's okay. It doesn't matter. It's still a resource to you. So if you're going to go someplace and you want to park in a specific area and not be hassled, go ahead and give HipCamp a try. And heck, maybe I'll build a spot at Tiki Bago Land and put it on HipCamp. I'll have to think about it, since there's so many things there that can kill you. Special thank you to Jane and everyone else who has bought me a gallon of diesel at buymeacoffee.com/builttogo. Because of Jane and everyone else, there are no ads in this podcast, and we all appreciate that. If you would like to support the show, please visit buymeacoffee.com/builttogo. That's two T's, not three, not one. And thank you. Van Life News. Well, we've got a mixed bag of news here today. We're going to start off with something fairly light, which is that someone has made a video game, not about van life per se, but about fitting all your stuff in your van. Apparently, there's this whole new realm of casual gaming that's about organizing stuff, like trying to fit things in. And there's a game coming out, it's not quite out yet, called Camper Van Make It Home, where you've got a Volkswagen van and a whole bunch of stuff, and you have to fit it in the van and then organize it the way you want. So it's not really like Tetris or anything like that. It has nice 3D isometric graphics of the van. The game looks beautiful from the preview I've seen. You get to pick the color of the furniture, and then you have to figure out where you're going to put the porta potty and all the Tupperware containers, and where are these blankets going to go, and oh, you've got a plant? Okay, where are you going to put a plant? And wait, you've got a dog? Okay, well then you're going to need to allocate space for the dog food and the water, and well, this isn't the kind of game I would normally play, but I think it's kind of hilarious that it's a game about what van life is really like, where, hey, I bought this cool new coffee mug at this store, and oh, I literally don't have space for another coffee mug. So if you'd like to check that out, it's available on Steam. It's called Camper Van Make It Home. It's not actually available yet. It's available to wishlist on Steam. I'll have a link in the show notes, but it could be a very cute thing. And unfortunately, like so many games, it is not available on Macs. This would be a PC game only. There is a demo you can download, though, so if you really want to play with it, you can download the demo. Again, you'll find that at the link. Okay, and this next piece of news, I've been thinking about this now for like 10 hours, about whether I should include this or not. So, no politics, no religion. Remember, those are the two things we don't have on this podcast. And, well, this is a little bit of both, and it is basically that several YouTubers now are making posts about how the upcoming election in the United States is going to be chaos, and it's not going to be safe out there. And that folks living in vans and RVs and living out as nomads need to take special precautions and stay away from big cities and find a place to hunker down and arm themselves and buy all kinds of food and all this stuff. Anyway, I am simply reporting the news that this is a trend on YouTube now. I have a link to one such story from Glorious Van Life, somebody I've linked to before. You can watch it and make up your own minds as to how realistic this is. And the argument is basically this. No matter which way the election goes, no matter who wins, the other side is going to cause massive civil unrest, mostly in big cities. That's the thought. My thought, basically, without getting into any politics, is we're a pretty prepared and self-reliant group of people to begin with. If you are living in your van full-time or spending significant amounts of time camping in any kind of vehicle, you've already got a lot of food and water, and you're already prepared for things like this. So I feel like these are a bit fear-mongering, and there's a video that is mentioned in the Glorious Van Life link that I know the couple who posted this video are actually trying to sell long-term leases on their campground that they just bought. I am not accusing them of creating this fear-mongering in order to have more people book with them, but it's something to consider. So you guys can watch if you want, make good decisions, and that's all I'm going to say about that. And finally, a piece of good news. Battery prices keep falling. I found a battery, and this is not an ad necessarily, it's just an example, but yes, I do have an affiliate link there, you know, because that's how it is. This is a 280 amp hour LiFePO battery. 280 amp hour, that's almost 300, for $459. Now, I ran some math on this battery. You could run a normal window air conditioner for about 8 hours on a very hot day with this battery for $459. This would have been triple this when I started doing this podcast. So good news for all of us. And in fact, I think 10 years from now, nearly all of us are going to be going all electric in our vans with no gas and we'll have air conditioning. I mean, that's my hope. It really seems like we're going that way. So this is on Amazon. I'll have a link in the show notes for it. It is some absolutely weird Chinese brand I've never heard of, and I have not used their battery, so I can't speak directly to it. But the fact that you can get nearly 300 amp hours of LiFePO battery for $459 is certainly newsworthy, at least to me. Tech Talk. Let's talk about awnings. So I don't actually have awnings on any of the vans I've built or on my Scamp. I have an awning on the Winnebago and I have an awning on the Airstream. And awnings are basically for folks who are living outside their vehicle rather than inside their vehicle. And most of the travel I do in my vans is of the living inside the vehicle type, where I drive all day, do things, I'm not in the van, and then I am basically in the van for cooking and sleeping, and that's it. But when I go out to Colorado and go to the Rocky Mountain Star Stair, I'm actually staying in the same place for 4 or 5 days, and I notice just how much difference an awning makes. Awnings completely change your experience. If you're going to go anywhere and spend any amount of time, try to have an awning for a few reasons. First is the obvious that they keep, it's a place to be outside without getting rained on. I mean, that's fairly obvious. The second is it's a place to be outside without having the sun beat down on you, and I find that to be its number one purpose. That's my favorite thing about awnings. But the next is, and I learned this from the Airstream, it keeps the heat off your vehicle. Now, my Airstream has awnings on all four sides. There's a back awning, a side awning, another side awning, and then a weird little awning in the front. And the idea is that all those awnings help keep the Airstream cool, including like the refrigerator, an area you really want to keep cool. And that actually does seem to work. So the issue with awnings is there's two. One is that they're very sensitive to wind, and a big gust of wind can destroy your awning. And they're expensive. If you look at the cost of awnings for even little vans, easily hundreds of dollars. And the cheaper ones that are maybe $150 require extensive setup time. You've got all these poles to put together and guy lines to put out and all this stuff. It makes it take a long time, which I find to be so annoying that I won't do it. So I have two possible solutions for you. One is to make your own awning. You can buy a nylon fly, attach it to your van with magnet, big magnets, magnetic hooks, and then have some kind of a pole with a guy line on the two corners, or maybe just in the middle, it depends on the size. Stake those down, and you've got a fairly workable awning. I've seen a lot of people do this, and they look very good. I think it's a solid solution. You're going to have to experiment a lot with the height and, you know, avoiding the door and things like that. Or you can do what I did with my Scamp, which is I bought a standalone canopy. Now, the standalone canopy I got was like a $50 thing. It's only 10 by 10, which is actually fairly small. But it did the job. It gave me a place to sit outside when it was raining and when it was super hot. And it also had the advantage of I could drive away if I wanted to. Now, in the Scamp, I didn't want to. But if you used one of these in your van, you could actually have it be away from the van a little bit, and you could just drive up next to it. You wouldn't have to take it down and set it up. The bad thing about these is that they take up space inside your van while you're traveling. They do take time to set up, and they're very easily broken. So it's not the best solution. The best solution is a very expensive awning that you put on the side of your van. But yeah, there's the very expensive part. So when you're doing your build, consider awnings, and consider awnings all around your van, especially if you have an absorption fridge, one of those fridges with the two vents on the outside, usually on the driver's side. Think about putting an awning over that area too, because those refrigerators lose a lot of their efficiency if there's sun beating down there. So I'm a fan of awnings. I think you should consider it, and I'll probably talk more about them as we go forward in the podcast. Product review. So, out of the blue, one of my listeners by the name of Danya, and I'm actually going to use her full name, Danya Howard, contacted me and thanked me for doing the podcast and told me a little bit about herself. And it turns out she's a truck driver. She has had a wild life with massive setbacks to overcome, and at the tender age of 50, decided that she was going to be a truck driver. And she went to school and did the whole thing, and she is right now currently driving a big rig across the country. Kind of an inspirational story. And she mentioned to me that she actually wrote a book about her story. And so I listened to it. I read it. You know, I did an audible of it. And I thought I would review that for you for this week's episode. This book was in the form of a diary. It has an extended introduction explaining things. And then it's a diary of Donnie's experience going through school and then finally driving a truck. And then all the unusual things that happened to her while driving a truck. And I always find these kind of books interesting, and this one was no exception. I have to be very delicate about how I mention this here. Danya and I come from very different worlds and have very different worldviews. And what this book did for me was let me see her worldview and how she experiences the world as a truck driver, which is very, very different from how I experience the world as a vanner driving around. We're seeing the same things, but interpreting them very, very differently. So Danya sees everything through the eyes of a deity, you know, God. Maybe you have heard of that, maybe not. And when she sees things happen, she attributes them to a God. That's not how I see things. When I see things, I wonder how that happened. I look to science for answers, not so much for Danya. And why would I want to read about somebody with such a different worldview? Because it's interesting. Because it helps to understand how other people see the world, and it helps to be able to interact with them on the same world that we're all sharing. So I recommend the book. It's not terribly long. I was able to listen to it in about 3 hours, so it was good for a trip. It's a book you likely can get for free if you have an Audible membership, or it's only 10 bucks if you want to get it on Kindle, whatever. I'll have a link in the show notes. This is the kind of thing I like to listen to while I'm driving, and the ability to, for a few hours, live with someone else's worldview, I found very, very valuable, and it gave me a new appreciation for how some people see the world. So the name of the book is Diary of a Female Truck Driver. It was published just this year in April of 2024. The author is Danya Howard, and I'll have a link in the show notes that'll take you to the paperback, the hardcover, the Kindle, and the audiobook. By the way, the audiobook is only $6 right now, so that's not a bad way to go. Tales from the Road. So I knew I was going to have a tale from the road this week about my trip to Vermont, because, hey, I'm driving the Sprinter. And not a single time have I taken a major trip in the Sprinter when the check engine light hasn't come on. Literally, since I've owned the thing, every single major trip I've taken, the check engine light has come on for something. Every single time. Take that for what it's worth. This time, it was for something totally bizarre and random. It was an error about the A heater for the DEF. Apparently, it had an open circuit. What does that mean? I don't know. I mean, I looked it up as much as I could in a rest area, and apparently no one's seen this error before. I mean, it's been heard of, but it's so rare that no one knows exactly how to fix it. One site said it had to replace the entire DEF system for $2,500. Another said it was probably just a loose wire. I don't know. Anyway, knowing what a DEF heater does and knowing that I'm driving in summer, I wasn't too worried about it interrupting my trip, unless it started doing the countdown of doom, which I was worried about. However, it didn't do that. So, okay, so I'm driving with the check engine light on. And then I start to hear a squeal. Yes, there's a squeal coming from under the hood, kind of like a belt squealing, but it sounded more metallic than that. It sounded like a pulley wearing out. And I was like, that is a problem. When I bought the Tiki Bago, which is a 1973 Winnebago Indian D22 that somebody had redone as a tiki bar in Oregon, in Grants Pass, Oregon, I left Grants Pass at 4 a.m. and drove over the mountains. And at about 5 a.m., I started hearing a squeal from underneath the doghouse. And then I heard a really loud squeal, a bang, and then silence. But I did notice that my temperature gauge started going up and up and up very, very quickly, because what I had heard was my water pump seizing and then the belt heating up and snapping. And this sounded similar in my Sprinter. I was like, oh, God. I mean, I've got 160,000 miles on the van. Could the water pump go? Absolutely. So what do I do? Well, I decided to just try to make it to Vermont, which I did. I made it to Vermont just fine. And I knew I had all the stuff to do in Vermont, so I got all that stuff done. I didn't have to do much driving once I got there. But after my trip was over, I knew I had to drive back to Chicago, and the thought of breaking down with a water pump failure in the Adirondacks in a Sprinter did not fill me with good things. Driving through the Adirondacks, it's very rare that you have cell phone service. It's one of the few places in the country where cell phone service hasn't really propagated. And it's not so much because of lack of wanting there to be cell phone service there. It's because of the topography. It's all hills and mountains. It actually looks a lot like West Virginia up there. So it's very difficult to have cell phone service in a lot of places. And I was really concerned that if I didn't get this problem fixed, driving back, I was going to break down by Paradox or Eagle Lake or Speculator or someplace like that and be in really big trouble. So I thought I'd be proactive. And I Googled online, and of course there's no Mercedes dealer in Vermont that can deal with Sprinters. I figured that, but I thought maybe because of that, there'd be some independent shops that could. And I found a super highly rated shop that worked on Sprinters. I was very excited. I was like, oh, great. I finally can take this thing into somebody who's not the dealer, who knows these vans. And they said, yep, bring it in, and we'll take a look at it. And I thought, oh, this is great. And how does August 17th sound? And I said, well, I'm actually traveling, and I have to get back to Chicago. And it's like, well, do you have any place you can stay, or can you drop the van off with us and then maybe fly home? And yeah, they weren't going to budge on that. They said that there are so few places that work on Sprinters in Vermont that was how it was. Everything you needed to have done on your van took 3 months. Now, they were very nice, and they gave me the name of somebody else. And I called them, and they were like, yeah, we can see you today. We might not be able to fix it today. We could fix it on Monday, but we can see you today. And I was like, oh, great. And it wasn't that far. I mean, it was a reasonable distance. And then they said, oh, what kind of a van do you have, by the way? And I was like, oh, it's a Sprinter 2500. And they said, is it the high top? And I was like, oh, yeah, it's the high top. And they said, oh, well, unfortunately, we can't work on high tops because they won't fit in our garage. But there's this guy in Bristol, Vermont, which is about an hour south, and he used to work on these. He might be able to help you. And at this point, I realized I was chasing the rabbit that I was never going to catch. I wasn't going to find somebody in Vermont who could quickly look at the van, figure out what the problem was, and then come up with a plan for fixing it. I mean, if I had to spend a few extra days in Vermont, I would have. That wouldn't have been the end of the world, but I couldn't. There wasn't anybody. So then I had this dilemma. I had to drive the van, thinking it was going to explode at any moment. And the shortest way and the most interesting way back is through the Adirondacks. Now, I could take 87 down through New York and go that way and be on the interstates where I'd have cell phone service, but it would add a couple hours, it would add a lot more traffic, and it would be a lot more boring. So I had to take this gamble. And I thought I probably shouldn't, but I decided that since the squeal had gone on this long and nothing bad had happened, maybe it would hold out long enough to get to, say, Ohio, where I could get some help. So I'm ready for my big trip. It's the morning I'm leaving. I reset all the codes with my scan tool. Check engine light is off, which I expect to come right back on because that was a permanent code. It was the code that doesn't go away. I just hope for the best with the belts. And so I start driving, and periodically I'm turning off the radio and the fan so I can listen to see if the squeal's getting worse or whatever. And every time I pull over, I'll pop the hood and see if I see any smoke or if the belt's starting to deteriorate or anything like that. And about 2 hours into the trip, I notice that the check engine light hasn't come back on. And I was like, oh, well, that's interesting. I guess that's a good thing. And then I notice the squeal is gone. And no, that is not a cause for celebration, because the thing that happens after the squeal stops is something explodes. Pulleys will squeal until they seize, and at that point, they don't squeal anymore, it's the belt that snaps. So I had to determine whether the belt was just sliding over the pulley, or the pulley had gotten so loose it was just wobbling now, I don't know. I pulled over, I opened the hood. Everything sounds perfectly fine. The belt looks fine. I don't see any pulleys wobbling. And I'm like, what happened? So I drive all the way home. In fact, I drove the entire way from Essex, Vermont to Chicago without stopping for more than half an hour at a rest area. 14 and a half hours of driving, maybe an hour and a half of gassing and stuff like that. And yeah, I was very tired. But you know what? I got here, I got to Chicago, and now the check engine light's off, and I don't have a squeal anymore. And I don't like it. I want an explanation. I want to know what happened. This takes us back to the Diary of a Female Trucker book by Donya. Donya had experiences like this with her truck, and she just assigned them to divine intervention because God is looking out for her. So that's what happened. God looked out for her. I don't have that worldview, so I don't have that comfort. Instead, what I have is a knowledge that something changed. And usually when things change in an engine, it's not to your benefit. So I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to fall. I'm going to be driving my van for a few hours this weekend, and we'll see what happens then. But I know one thing at least is that I'll have cell phone service, and I'll have some hope of getting help. But right now I'm in the situation where if I took it in for service, I wouldn't know what to tell them, because it sounds fine and the check engine light's still off. So wish me luck, or maybe I should be saying, pray for me? I don't know. You get to decide, but there's a very good chance I'm going to end up broken down on the side of the road in this thing, but maybe not. We will see. A place to visit. I have visited every Aurora in the United States and Canada. I say that ad nauseum, and yes, at some point I will actually do something with all the information and stories I gathered. It's kind of pathetic that it's been this long and I haven't done anything with them, but honestly, folks, I still think about them and still think about how to interpret what I saw. All these years later, I started doing that 5 years ago. Anyway, one of the places I visited was Aurora, North Carolina. Now, this was the southernmost Aurora on the East Coast, and there aren't any south of there. And probably the most, what's the word? I'm going to use the word devastated of all the Auroras I visited. Apparently, 10 or 15 years ago now, there was a massive hurricane that came through the town, and they just never rebuilt. I was amazed when I drove through the downtown area where there were all these little shop windows and such, and the windows were smashed in, and all the merchandise was just still there on the floor. Like, there were racks of clothing still on the floor, and the glass was still on the street. It was like they just gave up and left. And that actually might not be too inaccurate. But there's still a reason to go to Aurora, North Carolina, and that is that they have a museum there, a very interesting museum, unlike any other museum in the United States, the Aurora Fossil Museum. Now, sure, there are other museums that have fossils. That's not too difficult. But this one is very specific to the fossils you find in a phosphate mine. So just north of Aurora is, I think, the country's largest phosphate mine. And if you drive up there, you'll see these massive machines, big, huge cranes and what we used to call steam shovels. And the shovel part was the size of a house. These things are moving incredible amounts of material. And phosphates are formed at the bottom of seas, so everything that dies in the sea falls down and ends up in this phosphate layer. So they frequently find all kinds of prehistoric clams and other shellfish and shark's teeth, including megalodon teeth. And the most interesting of the things they've found are in this museum. But that's still not the best part. This museum knows that interactive museums are where it's at, so they will bring over phosphate tailings from the mine and dump them out in a park, and you can go through and sift and find your own stuff. Now, I went there on a day that they were closed, and that pile had already been heavily sifted, but it didn't take me much time at all to find some fossilized scallops and clams and things like that. And I was talking with somebody else who was there who found all kinds of shark teeth. In fact, they had a collection, and they showed me the megalodon teeth that they had found there. These things are the size of your hand. And they found them just in this one pile that this museum had set up. So this is a free museum. It's completely free. And if you're driving the east coast of the U.S., say from New England to Florida or something, this is a bit off the interstate. It would take some effort to get there, but it would definitely be something to break up your trip and experience something completely different. It's otherworldly, it's bizarre, and you could come home with some really nice fossils that could be worth hundreds of dollars if you had to buy them in a store. So you can find out more information about this at the AuroraFossilMuseum.org website, or I'll have a link in the show notes, and I really hope to get back there as soon as I can, because it was a cool place. Resource recommendation. A little while ago, I talked about gas, propane gas, and some of the problems you can have with it, and I found, just stumbling about on YouTube, a very, very good video that talks about problems with gas. And specifically, they're talking about problems with gas grills, but it's the same for us. And it talks about how to tell the difference between when your safety mechanism in your regulator has tripped or your regulator has gone bad. And apparently what's happening is people are tripping the safety feature a lot and then replacing their regulators because they think there's something wrong with the regulator, when in fact, it might just be this new safety mechanism. I really wish they would design these things differently so that when the safety mechanism trips, there's like a red flag or something that shows you that. Because now people don't know. All they know is they're just getting a little bit of gas through, not enough. And it's simply that they opened their valve too quickly or they had something on. And to recap very briefly, if you change your propane tank and then turn on the valve very quickly, it will trip the safety mechanism. And the safety mechanism's purpose is so that you don't have a massive gas leak if somebody cuts the hose or whatever. But it can also be tripped if you have something on in your rig. For example, if one of the burners is on, or, and this is a really hard one to figure out if you're going through this, your water heater's on. Imagine this, you run out of gas, your water heater cools off, it's still calling for heat, there's just no propane. So that thing is constantly trying to get more propane. You hook up the tank and open it up, it finally sees propane and then starts sucking as much propane as it can get. The safety mechanism sees that as a cut line and goes tink and then shuts off your gas. That is a very common scenario. So if you want to understand this fully and you want to know exactly what to do to prevent it, to reset it, and when it's time to actually replace your regulator because it's gone bad, watch this video on YouTube. I'll have it linked in the show notes. It is called The Number One Reason Your Gas Grills Are Failing. That's the name of the video. But it's probably easier just to click the link in the show notes. Well, folks, thank you very much for joining me for episode 217. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. And if you'd like to hear Fisher Wagg's new single, I'll have a link in the show notes for that. Until next time, remember this quote by Anonymous. I don't know who it was, but it's a very nice one. And it is, it's better to see something once than to hear about it 1,000 times.